The Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for Thursday, May 6th will come to order. We have three bills on the agenda today, and we'll start out with Senator Cohen's. I should note that it's our committee administrator, Cap O'Rourke's birthday today, so happy birthday, Cap. He won't tell us how old he is, so we don't really know, so he's not admitting anything. Some people think he's 33, some people think he's 50, so we're not exactly sure which one's right. But he doesn't get carded, I know that. Okay. Senator Cohen, welcome to the committee, Senate File 3304.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and happy birthday. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 3304 is a significant variation of what I've presented to this division in the past. I've authored a variety of housing legislation.
Senator Cohen, can you pull that mic a little bit closer
to you?
And a quorum is present.
Mr. Chairman, I began saying that I've authored a variety of housing legislation over the last several years, and given some of the budget constraints, a lot of this has not been successful. Obviously, we've done some work in the bonding bill, but in terms of trying to meet housing needs throughout the state, that has not happened. Senate File 3304, which is a proposal put together by the Minnesota Housing Partnership in conjunction with others that you'll hear from, is legislation that takes the mortgage deed tax excess earnings. It doesn't increase the tax, and members might be aware that I've had legislation in the past that does so. But this takes the increase in the tax and directs it toward housing. It doesn't fund the Housing Trust Fund, but it does fund the Challenge Grant, which is involved with significant rental construction, and at least provides a start, a very significant start, toward trying to deal with the lack of housing, affordable housing in the state. So what this legislation will do is again, direct money for that construction. This legislation, and Mr. Chairman, I guess I should have offered the preface that this is, as we know, late in the session. And so the expectation is we wanted to at least present the bill to this division, make sure that members had a sense of what was going on, and then allow the those involved, Mr. Hallbeck as well as others, to work with local governments during the interim period to make sure that that relationship is cemented in terms of where the housing is to be constructed. Obviously, Mr. Chairman, given some of your interest, I don't have to suggest to you that any effort over these next couple of years to secure support for construction would not only have the impact of making sure people have housing and access to employment, affordable housing to live in, but would also allow for some significant increase in jobs. I think the expectation is, and Mr. Melander is here to testify, is that there will be several thousand people who might be employed through the utilization of this legislation. Obviously, once housing is built and is on the tax rolls, then you also have the added advantage that you'll be able to develop additional monies, tax revenues, both in terms of the construction revenues as well as property taxes payable to local units and school districts. So the circular nature of this legislation is such that it's of benefit not just to those who ultimately benefit from it, those who need the housing, but a variety of other places in the economic food chain of the state. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a very brief essence of the bill. And I know at this late date you've got a couple of other bills on the agenda. I do have several people who would like to testify, and so I'd like to have go to testimony, if that's okay with yourself, Mr. Chairman, as well as members of the division. Initially, I would like to ask Mr. Hallbeck to testify. Again, he's the executive director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership and can offer some an overview that members have heard before in terms of the needs throughout the state, as well as how this legislation dovetails into what the particular needs are.
Welcome. Say your name for the record.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Chip Hallbach with Minnesota Housing Partnership and representing the Housing Partnership and the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers and the Housing Jobs Campaign. I just want to be very brief in terms of providing a little bit of context on the housing situation facing the state. And there's several ways to come at this. And first, of course, is what's happening to the well-being of Minnesotans, individuals who need affordable housing. The second is the need for construction work out there, which, of course, has been before the legislature throughout the session. And then third is the interest that communities have in ensuring that their economic strength is preserved because they have a housed workforce for development. But first, in terms of the need facing Minnesotans, we've testified before that the state has reached a point where 1 in 8 households across Minnesota is paying over half their income for housing. And that's been a trend over the last 5 years. In fact, that proportion of households needing paying over half their income for housing is increasing proportionately faster in Minnesota than anywhere else in the country. And that number is runs through 2008, so before the worst part of the recession has set in. And more recently, we've seen confirmations of what happens when people are paying more than half their income for housing. Just yesterday, there was media about the large increase in foreclosures. There had been a little dip, but that has increased again, and most of the new foreclosures that are happening are because of the cost burden, that people do not have the incomes to maintain their mortgage. Last month, Wilder Research provided its information on the most recent survey of homeless individuals, and it found that across the state, family homelessness with families with children had increased 27% in the last 3 years. Again, this is by and large due to the rough economy, and this is the housing dimension, the consequence of this rough economy. What this bill gets at is trying to expand the resource for affordable housing, not only for those families, but to put construction workers to work. We've had in the last several years, and you'll hear later, over half of the residential construction workers have lost their jobs or have become underemployed, and then also the importance of housing to communities. While jobs are decreasing in many places, there are some communities where there's actually an increase in jobs and a constraint on what the companies can do because of the lack of housing. DigiKey in northwestern Minnesota is a prime example of that. So, but just in terms of the need, and this bill gets at increasing the supply of housing to make a 10-year commitment of this surplus of the additional mortgage and deed taxes coming in. And it would allocate that through Minnesota Housing and their challenge program to expand the supply of affordable housing. And I wanted to just tie in that back in 2003, the BBC did a research project on behalf of the state to figure out what the need was for housing. And they said in this decade, which now ended in 2010, the state needed 33,000 additional affordable housing units above the amount that was being created through the private sector and state resources and that were then available. Since that time, there has been essentially no increase, no cut into that 33,000 units of affordable housing needed. And more recently, the Metropolitan Council, said for this decade we're just entering into, there's a need just in the metro area that, between 2010 and 2020 of 51,000 affordable housing units. And you'll find out later from the city's representatives that the cities themselves don't see how they're going to begin to get at that a large need out there without some sort of commitment of resources that comes from the state. So we have a in terms of this essential part of our state, affordable housing that people can afford, particularly our lower paid workers, we have huge signs of duress in terms of homelessness, foreclosures, people paying high proportions of their income for housing, and a projection that that's going to go forward over the next several years. So really speaking in favor of this legislation and hope that the legislature can work with Senator Cohen and figure out how this commitment can be made. With that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Halbig. Any questions of the witness? Mr. Melander, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, I know. Well, Senator Cohen, when you were talking, you mentioned that this was for housing statewide. So I guess my question to either of you at the witness table, is that covered in housing finance agency protocol, so it's not, you don't need to mention that in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, that's correct. That okay. The agency has done a good job of making sure that the monies appropriated to it are distributed and handled on a statewide basis.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Sure. Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think Senator Kubley is exactly right. The challenges are statewide, and so I'm sure that the Housing Finance Agency will have some rules or regs that kind of help out the entire state. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metz and Senator Kubley, I mean, as you can tell from the bill, this simply takes the excess proceeds and those are paid in to the Housing Finance Agency. So this doesn't change the programs or the distribution. Now, it goes to the challenge fund, primarily not to the other funds, but it doesn't change the distribution. And the agency's done a good job of making sure that, depending on where the needs are, that's where the money that they have is spent.
Chairman, and there's no new money. It just takes it the next couple of years with the stamps and that.
Yeah, it takes the excess.
Excess
over.
Later.
Correct.
Yeah. So there's no appropriation this time.
Correct.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, there's no appropriation for 2011, but in the fiscal note, there's tails in 12 and 13. Can you give us some insight into that?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, I think this was drafted so that it's prospective because obviously if, in fact, I was just handed the fiscal note, which I had not seen before, or I've seen it before, but I didn't have it in front of me. And I don't, Mr. Chairman, is the fiscal note in our packets?
They just handed it over.
Okay, so you're seeing it as well.
Yeah,
so,
pages.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, as you can tell, the monies as collected show up in FY12. And so that's when they're distributed. Because obviously, if you're taking the excess, from yesterday, that doesn't, you would need some period of time to start collecting the money for distribution.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chair. And Senator Cohen, could you give us just some idea? So this will be, could you give us some idea that if we did not pass this legislation, how those funds would be divided by the housing? Because obviously they would use the excess, I assume, the Housing Finance Agency. And so what programs would that normally go to? Or where? How are we it sounds like we're sort of redirecting this money or making sure it goes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch. I mean, the bill simply augments what Housing Finance is doing currently. It doesn't change their programs. It doesn't add new programs. It adds money to what is already the existing appropriation. And obviously, as members of this division know, given what we've been doing the last 3 or 4 years, we've cut back housing finance as we have every other place. This does it in a way that I think, at least at this point, doesn't entice opposition. I think it's supported by the industries, the affected industries. Mr. Melander can testify to some of that. And so I think it's a way to augment the money that's, to be honest, politically acceptable.
Mr. Melander.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, committee members, my name is Harry Melander. I'm employed by the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council as their chair. My comments will be brief today, but they're actually going to be from two premises, one from an advocacy standpoint, and also then the opportunity that we believe this bill will provide in regards to employment. Humbly, for those of you that don't know, I've been actively involved in affordable housing since the mid-70s with my involvement with the Migrant Action Program, with the migrant workers in Iowa. My introduction to CHIP during the Purpose Administration is appointees for affordable housing of the 90s. And my role as chair of the Washington County HRA and presently as the board member of the Twin City Housing Neighborhood Development Corporation, all organizations that provide clean, affordable housing for poor people.
So you've been around almost as long as Senator Cohen.
Pardon?
He's been around almost as long as you.
I know it is embarrassing.
but you know what, Mr. Chairman? At Building Trades, they pay more attention to Mr. Melander than some of you folks pay attention to me. So
it's not true. And I promise that I only tell you the good parts of my knife, not the sullied ones. Mm-hmm. So with that, from an employment opportunity, I've had the opportunity all session long to come up here, and we're very appreciative of all the hard work that you've done so far to put Minnesotans back to work. As I like to say, there's still more work to be done. Our industry has been hit in depressionary area times, or not close to what we've seen in depressionary times in regards to the unemployment within the construction industry. This bill really provides an opportunity for us to get back into the housing market, not only in the metropolitan area, but throughout the state of Minnesota. Not only does it provide a great need for those that can't afford market rate housing, but from an employment standpoint, the residential or the stick-built industry is very, very labor-intense. So our position on this bill is that not only does it provide good, fair, hopefully clean housing for folks throughout all of Minnesota, but creates a huge employment opportunity for folks not only in the urban areas but in greater Minnesota also. So we just encourage you to look at this and hopefully move the thing forward and not only create affordable housing but also great opportunities for employment for all Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there's any questions, I'll answer.
Thank you, Mr. Melander. Any questions of this witness? Who else do you have here, Mr. Senator?
Mr. Chairman, had hoped to have former Minneapolis City Councilmember Steve Kramer, who's the Executive Director of PPL. He was not able to come, but also we wanted to have Kristen Beckman from Habitat for Humanity testify.
Beckman, thanks, welcome. Members of the committee. My name is Kristen Beckman. I'm with the Twin Cities affiliate of Habitat for Humanity. Right now, we are hard at work combining volunteer and financial resources from corporations, congregations, foundations, individuals, and from the State Finance Agency through the Challenge Funds to buy foreclosed empty houses, rehab them to a high green standard, and sell them to a Habitat homeowner, who is typically a family of four making about $27,000 a year. Now, that's in the Twin Cities area. There are also 33 other Habitat affiliates across the state building in, I think, almost every one of your districts. There are a few differences between the Twin Cities affiliate and Greater Minnesota affiliates. The Greater Minnesota affiliates are typically building new homes. And the Greater Minnesota affiliates are also, they serve an overwhelming majority of single moms who are trying to make a difference for their kids in having a stable home. Whereas the Twin Cities affiliate, we primarily serve people of color and recent immigrants. And so the similarities between Greater Minnesota affiliates and the Twin Cities affiliates are that when we sell these Habitat homes, we sell them at a 0% mortgage interest. There's no down payment on the house. The Habitat homeowner works 300 to 500 hours of sweat equity as their down payment into it. And then when we start collecting the monthly mortgage payments from Habitat homeowners, the $350 basically that comes in once a month off of these homes, we reinvest it back into affordable housing. And we think with this opportunity, with this bill, and we're very appreciative of Senator Cohen bringing it and Senator Tomasoni hearing it and championing it, is that it's an opportunity for the state to match what Habitat does with our model, is direct revenue that comes off of housing back into housing. And that the money that would be brought back into the system, when we sell a house to a Habitat homeowner, they become a property taxpayer. We create construction jobs. We buy construction materials, as do all the other affordable housing developers. And so money coming off of the out of housing revenue, going back into housing, creating jobs, creating revenue back from property taxes and other taxes into the coffers of both the city and the county and the state, that the money invested in this and directed to the Department of Housing and to the Challenge Fund that is used across the state will be seen back in the general fund and back in the Department of Housing. And at the same time, it will help stabilize the housing market, will increase property values, it'll increase housing prices, which is also a good goal for us right now in this housing crisis. So there are a lot of wins in this bill, not only for folks who are struggling to afford housing, but it's also good for our entire economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beckman. Any questions or comments? Okay. Who wants to go next?
Ms. Nauman? Ms. Nauman from Metro Cities, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. We represent 80 cities across the 7-county metropolitan area, and we are in support of this bill as it does contribute additional state resources for providing affordable housing. In Minnesota, the provision of affordable housing and all housing is really primarily private market driven. But in terms of providing affordable housing, our policies support actually all government levels playing a role. That's the cities playing a role, the federal government, and the state government. Cities are responsible for much of the ground level work in terms of planning for housing, guiding land, working with developers, and building code enforcement and those kinds of things. The state also needs to be a partner, and primarily it does that through providing appropriations. Let me speak to the number that Mr. Halbach referenced earlier, the 51,000 units that are have been determined by the Met Council to be the number needed for affordable housing by 2020. Cities in the metro area are, and I know this is a statewide bill and we do support that, but I'll just speak to the metro issue. Cities in the metropolitan area are uniquely situated in that they are required by statute to guide land for affordable housing as part of their comprehensive plans. The number that the Met Council has determined is the need number, that 51,000, is then allocated down by each city and each township in the metro area, and each city is given a number that it is required to then plan for by statute. So those are the numbers in the metro area. Each city gets a number, and it depends largely on a city's level of affordable housing, its access to transit, access to low-wage jobs, and those kinds of factors. So that's just those are cities in the metropolitan area are compelled by law to plan. In order to be able to reach those numbers, we do need the state to be a partner in providing additional resources, and this bill would help to do that. So we would offer our support. Thank you.
Thank you. And any questions, Ms. Nauman?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Von Felt, who's a managing partner with the Duffy Development Company, to offer a contractor's perspective.
Mr. Von Felt. Just say your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for hearing this morning. My name is Jeff Von Felt. I'm the development manager with Duffy Development Company and also a partner in a few of the affordable housing developments that we've developed. We're a for-profit entity that's been partnering with Minnesota Housing since 1993 in affordable housing developments. And we currently own and manage more than 600 units in the metro area, primarily in the metro area, including cities like Maple Grove, Woodbury, Forest Lake, Chaska, and others. Our partnership with Minnesota Housing has been strong over the years, and we've together been able to help many cities, such as those I listed, to meet their affordable housing goals. The process, however, for creating this housing is a long one, from the point of site selection through the application process at MHFA to construction and completion and leasing can easily be 3 years long, sometimes shorter and sometimes longer. A stable source of funds like what you're discussing today would help developers like myself move forward on these developments a little bit sooner and be confident that there would be funding available to do these developments. Today's marketplace is a difficult investor marketplace. Most of the funding we use to do these developments is through the federal tax program, and that program has lost probably about 30% of its value in the last few years, which creates a larger gap to do these developments. Again, the gap has to be filled in order to create the housing in a quality, affordable way. The gaps are just there because the rents can't support a mortgage large enough. I'd like to just give you a few demographics of the folks that we serve in our properties. Most of the families in our properties are employed, and they work in the fields of the medical sector, which would be such positions as nurses, nurses' aides, or office and clerical work in hospitals and clinics. They work in the public sector, which are folks that work for the cities, school districts, police and fire departments, et cetera. Most of our families are employed in the service sector, so those folks that you see every day when you go out to eat or go grocery shopping or shop at local merchants. And also a percentage of our residents are constructed or employed in the construction industry, and are directly affected by the type of work that we do. However, it should be noted that our residents have been hit hard by the economic crisis, and between 14 and 20% of our residents are unemployed, which is a little bit misleading because we do have a number of supportive housing units where when they are brought in, when they come into our units, they are unemployed and homeless at the time. We provide housing for more than 600 or 900 children, and approximately half of our families are led by a single parent. I'd also like to point out that housing that we create creates jobs in the construction field. We are going to start construction on a development in Elk River this summer. We are under out for bid right now, and I've had discussions with the contractors, and we're estimating that somewhere in the area of 200 jobs could be created over an 11-month period just on this construction development alone. That's on-site and office folks. In addition, the city of Elk River will receive funding directly from this development. We will pay more than $500,000 directly to the city for fees such as building permits and sack and whack charges, park dedication fees, and they'll receive their portion of approximately $50,000 of property taxes. I know the city staff eagerly awaits these developments as their jobs are on the line a little bit if they don't have development happening in their city. So I just wanted to note that Duffy Development does support Senate Bill 3304 by creating, like I said, a stable source of funds that allows us to move forward more quickly and create more affordable housing sooner. And if you have any questions,
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Von Felt, I guess, I was just wondering if you'd taken a look at the jobs bill that came to this committee from Senator Metzen's committee. I think there are some things in there that would be helpful for your business as well. I really think it's one of the better things we've done for business in my time here. So, I'd like to suggest that you take a look at that bill. If you haven't done that, I think you'd find some good things there.
Okay, we'll do that.
Senator Metzen, you should comment.
Just thank you, Senator Kubley. There's a lot of good tools in that bill, and I would hope that those in the audience that are concerned about, and we're all concerned about this industry and jobs and building, and but there are a lot of tools in that bill, and Senator Bach ended up carrying it and did a wonderful job. So we look at all the parts of the puzzle, whether it be historic buildings or what have you. There's lots of tax credits there, and I think they're all intertwined. And I really want to, at this point, compliment Senator Cohen for bringing this forward. This is a great addition to getting people back to work and getting affordable housing in Minnesota. So thank you, Senator Cohen.
Thanks. Senator Cohen. And Mr. Chairman, members, I don't suggest that this legislation in of itself is an answer to everything, but obviously we've tried this session with a variety of our efforts, Senator Metzen, Senator Bach, principally, but there have been other efforts. Senator Tomasoni, you've had legislation. I know we've got a bill on this morning's agenda. I think this is another piece of a very important part of what we need to be doing. And certainly I should also accentuate that this money ends up coming back, and I think always difficult to know the exact percentage you would use as to a return, but I think upwards of 50% of the money will find itself coming back in form of taxes, other kinds of avenues. So there are a lot of things that that are presented through this bill, and certainly an important opportunity to further what we're doing with affordable housing. And I think, Mr. Chairman, you've had a perspective on this from a variety of areas, building trades, private developers, and contractors. But again, I don't suggest that this bill is a panacea for everything that's going on in terms of the need for jobs in Minnesota.
Senator Cohen, maybe we should make an omnibus housing bill here because we got a couple of bills to start with. But I have a serious question for you. The bill that I have on the agenda is attempting to create some further bonding mechanisms for affordable housing. Yours, I believe, is all cash, but is it also available for bonding if the Housing Finance Agency decides to do that?
It would be, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so there's some creative attempts here to do something about the housing crisis that we have, and I know that the construction industry itself was hit pretty hard by the housing crisis and the mortgage crisis, and I think Minnesota alone lost over 25,000 jobs in this industry. So this is a place where I think we really need to figure out a way to do something creative and to get some housing, affordable housing, and just housing starts back up. Senator Metzen,
That's an excellent point. I mean, this money, I don't know the numbers for sure, but I would guess that on the bonding end of it could leverage 5-6 times what the allocated amount we have here, I would guess. I don't know if anybody's put the numbers to that, but if you bond with this kind of money, you could do probably 5 times more than you think you could do for that, Is that correct, Mr.
Senator Cohen?
Duffy Jr.?
Mr. Chairman, Sir Minister, I'm not sure of.
We should look at that.
The exact multiplication. There's no question that the combination of this bill along with Senator Tomasoni's bill would make a big difference in terms of the challenge fund.
Any further comments or questions for Senator Cohen? Seeing none, then Senator Cohen moves that Senate File 3304 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Cohen.
Thanks.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Is he hearing well?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, let's do, as long as we're on housing there, let's do the housing bill 3273 first, and I think there's a delete all amendment, Mr. Chairman, to put it in a shape that we think will work best. I'm not sure if I brought it here with me or not. And members, this delete all amendment is basically the same as the bill with a couple of little provisions added at the end to make the mechanism in the bill work a little bit better, is my understanding. And they've done this already over in the House, and so it's just matching up with what the House does.
Senator Tomasoni will move the A1 authors delete all amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Tomasoni.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and committee members, what we're trying to do here is, again, be creative and flexible on how we fund housing through the Housing Finance Agency. And some of us thought that there might be an opportunity for the Housing Finance Agency itself to free up some of its own money that's generated or that's given to them and to do some bonding with the money and to issue up to $30 million in bonds, one for implementing a challenge program and another for land acquisition in neighborhoods. The bill itself appropriates the funds from the general fund with an annual reduction in state funding from the Challenge Grant Program, and then that matches the amount of debt service needed for the bonds. So under the bill, the amount provided annually from the challenge program is only reduced if the agency issues the challenge bonds. It seemed to me that one of the things that was happening was that the Housing Finance Agency was subject to the whims of the general fund and whether or not we had deficits and whether or not we had surpluses, and so the housing sometimes benefited, sometimes it suffered. And at least this way, they'd be able to use money that was generated internally. The amendment, and I think maybe Mr. Jensen can help me if I want, help me here. I believe what it does is it takes money from the challenge program, moves it to the general fund so that we have the full faith and credit of the state backing it, and then backs the bonds that the agency would issue. And so it's just it's an attempt to do something for our housing crisis here. So I have a couple of witnesses that would like to testify on this, and I'll turn it over to them.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Chairman, senators and committee members, my name is Alan Arthur, and I'm the president of an organization called AON, which is one of the leading nonprofit developers and providers of affordable housing in the state of Minnesota. We have 1,700 affordable apartment homes for people in the community, including more for homeless people has been done than any organization in the state of Minnesota. We've also done more historic preservation, interestingly, than any organization in the Minnesota for-profit or nonprofit. I've been in the construction, code enforcement, housing development, real estate business for 40 years. In my travels, in many organizations, both working for and being part of in different ways, I've always been opposed to eating my babies. In other words, I've always been opposed to taking from the future what is our future. And some perspectives of this particular bill in front of you is that that's what this might do and that we should be careful about that. In this case, I am strongly in support of this bill for two very important reasons. It's not eating our babies. This is taking a piece of future, the future, and not creating something that goes away. It's just trading the future asset for a current asset. More affordable housing for people today. More jobs for people today. The further thing to understand is that in the affordable housing business, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and all of us who work with them are very good at leveraging those babies, leveraging those dollars, so that depending on the kind of program or housing that's being developed or redeveloped, for every $1 of asset invested in affordable housing, there's actually two. For every $1 towards new jobs, there's actually two jobs to three or four or five jobs being created because of that leverage, depending on the kind of project it is. And so for those two reasons, that we're not really eating our babies, that we are actually just using our babies today, creating an asset that will be there for 20, 30, 40 years, forever, if we do it right, and we usually do in the state of Minnesota, I'm fully supportive of this bill and hope that you'll move it forward and make it happen. And happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur. Mr. Voss.
Hi, I'm Kim Voss. I'm the Housing Director at Interfaith Outreach and Community Partners, headquartered in Wayzata. We serve eight communities in western Hennepin County. I want to thank the committee members and Senator Tomasoni for bringing this issue to our attention. We serve people with a variety of needs, housing being one of them. I testified for this bill also in the House, in the Housing Committee, and I'm glad that in the Senate this bill is in the proper committee, that is the Economic Development Committee, because in my mind this is really a jobs bill. It helps lift an industry that has been crushed by the economic collapse. With this money and the leverage, we create 1,200 units of housing. We create 1,200 direct jobs, good-paying jobs in the construction industry, and indirectly 400 additional jobs. I mentioned that our agency tries to help meet some of these needs in western Hennepin County. As part of that work, we're creating an affordable housing project where we use volunteers in the rehabilitation of a building. Generally, when we do this kind of project, we have unskilled volunteers. It's sad that in this economic collapse, we have skilled carpenters who are happy to get out of the house, come and volunteer to do the rehabilitation of this building. And I'm sad to say that I get calls from some of those people confirming that we are providing a lunch for them while they're working there that day. I think housing has been the impetus for the economic collapse that's affected us all, and we won't return from the brink until we address this housing crisis. I just want to share a few facts that were offered recently in a federal congressional hearing of the banking and financing held here in Minneapolis on January 23rd. We have a 56% in increase in foreclosures in 2009 compared to 2008. Now, this was in January that this hearing. Since then, just in the last couple of days, and I've prepared this to pass out to the committee members, we have learned that foreclosures are up again sharply in the first quarter of this year, 28% compared to the first quarter of last year, 11% over the last quarter. So we see the need. There are 2,200 foreclosures in Hennepin County in 4 years, over 4% of the total housing stock in that county. I think Chip shared some figures about the Halbeck of the Minnesota Housing Partnership shared some figures. One that stuck in my mind is only 44 affordable units are available for every 100 households at or below 30% of the AMI. Certainly we know the need for the housing units. We see the economic impacts of this bill. I think we're getting a double payoff here, and we really need to do something to jumpstart this industry. And I support the bonding mechanism because, like Alan said, it brings the funds forward to this year. I think we need to do something before this industry falls even further, and I've passed out information that will show the impact of the foreclosure crisis in each county in Minnesota. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I'll stand for any questions.
This is kind of a fine point in the House.
Senator Metzen.
Help me understand, if we appropriate, the way I understand it, $2.4 million a year to service the bonds, right?
Correct.
What amount of bonds... How many dollars in bonds would that generate with $2.4 million a year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, we believe it's about $30 million.
Okay, that's good to know, I think,
if I'm not mistaken, in the bonding bill, we gave the agency the ability to go to $36 million because of the interest rates were lower. Isn't that correct, Mr. Jensen?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important for the committee to know what it generates, and that'll get us some stuff done here, that kind of money.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think it was eventually $10 million, and the governor vetoed that money.
But there was a provision where the $2.4 million that was going to service $30 million in bonds, we allowed them to go to $36 million for the $2.4 because of the low interest rates. But I don't know if we did it in...
Mr. Chairman, that may have been authorized in the 2009 session.
Okay, I think that's correct. Okay. And one of the reasons for the mechanism that's in the bill, it's to make the bonds marketable. But I just want everybody to know that it would also count in the calculation of new capital investment guidelines. So it would be a $2.4 million against the capital investment. But I think it's a creative way to try and do something, and I think you heard some pretty good testimony here as to why it's a good idea. So I don't know if there are any questions or comments, but if there aren't, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Dibble, I believe, had a question.
Thanks. I just had a similar question to Senator Metzen's. I'm very supportive of this, and I know this idea has been around for a little bit. This is great, and it's very much about jobs and providing housing in a time that we need to do that. But I'm just curious just about the details a little bit. The 2.4, this might be a question for Mr. Jensen. So I'm just trying to understand this $2.4 million general fund appropriation. Now, does this support the entire debt service for this $30 million bond issue, or is it just to address a gap? These are agency bonds, right, that are typically self-supporting, but we need this $2.4 million general fund kind of support support the financing and make it marketable to Senator Tomasoni's point. Is
Mr.
that correct,
Jensen.
Or am I not understanding?
Mr. Chairman and members, the $2.4 million each year would support a $30 million
bond. Oh, the full
$30
million.
I think you should understand in this bill, then, if it was that much, housing finance should use their own resources to transfer back to the general fund to offset that cost. So housing finance has to use, let's say, $2.4 million of their resources each year and take away from other projects to fund this $30 million.
And
Senator Dibble.
But these bonds are classically agency bonds. They're not GO bonds, per se.
Mr. Chairman, we have an opinion from Minnesota Management and Budget that these would be general obligation bonds, and we have to count them, as Senator Tomasoni explained, against the state debt capacity.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Arthur, did you have?
Chairman, committee members, just want to remind you that $30 million worth of capital here actually leverages somewhere probably between $30 and $60 million worth of jobs and $30 to $90 million worth of actual housing production. Just to make that very clear, depending on how the agency ultimately uses the dollars, what kinds of leverage housing programs. And that's because in a typical rental housing a world, the agency's portion is only a portion of the total development of a project, and so that's why that works that way.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess with that,
Mr. Jensen has one more.
Mr. Chairman, in the members in the delete all amendment on page 3, line 3, there is kind of a new purpose for the funds, the neighborhood land trusts. In recent years, we have not been able to fund that, and it might be useful if the committee understood how much of this money would go to the neighborhood land trusts. And I think the agency could respond to that, or perhaps one of the advocates has an idea of how much money would now go to the neighborhood land trusts and whether or not those come off the local tax rolls and the local government loses the tax income.
Miss Orr?
Thank you.
Hi, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. If I heard the question correctly, it was about the Neighborhood Land Trust. There is a statutory program for Neighborhood Land Trusts. It has in the past been funded with GO bonds. We have, through the Challenge Program, funded community land trusts at considerable levels over the past 8 or 9 years. In addition to buying the mortgages for the homeowners. So we don't see any problem with using these resources for the Neighborhood Land Trust. I'm not an expert on how the land trusts are taxed, but I believe that the land is actually taxed as though the property owner, the building owner, So the property is taxed both building and land together, and it's not taxed separately as the land is not taxed separately as a tax exempt or owned by a tax exempt organization.
That's correct. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Senators, my name is Jeff Washburn, Executive Director with the City of Lakes Community Land Trust, the community land trust serving the city of Minneapolis, and I can speak on this point on behalf of all the community land trusts in the state and close to 800 community land trust homeowners, that they pay 100% of the assessed value of their properties, and that includes for both land and the improvements on those properties.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, could I just elaborate a little bit on the discussion about whose bonds these are and that? The Housing Finance Agency, as you know, is one of the largest bond issuers in the state. What we issue are tax-exempt revenue bonds. Those are bonds that we use then to buy mortgages from banks who have made the mortgages to first-time home buyers. The revenue is the mortgage payment that that first-time home buyer makes that then we use to pay off the bondholder. These bonds that are being proposed in this legislation are appropriation bonds. They are not revenue bonds. The resources that will be available to pay off the bondholders would be the appropriations that you make in this legislation. And as I understand the legislation at this point, the idea is to reduce the challenge fund base over the next 20 years in order to, and then sort of return it to the general fund and then reappropriate it as debt service payments. But they are different bonds than what we are typically, what we generally do. We have done appropriation bonds in 2008. The legislature authorized us to do appropriation bonds and then appropriated the money for us to make those bond payments. This legislation, like the legislation in 2008, specifically says we cannot pledge the full faith and credit of the state. So these are not GO bonds. They're not our GO and they're not the state's GO. They are strictly appropriation bonds that the rating agencies will then rate based on the likelihood of you all continuing to appropriate the money. And so far that's, you know, the state of Minnesota hasn't defaulted on any of its obligations. But I just want to, it's maybe a technicality that maybe doesn't make any difference, but I felt like it was important to let you know.
Thank you for clarifying that. Senator Cope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Thomas, maybe I missed it and I apologize if I did. But you've got the two, for the $30 million, you've got grants that are available for Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program for the building, which is what we're talking about. We're trying to get some construction jobs. And then we talked about the land trust. You've got it also for land acquisition. Did I miss the – what would you anticipate the breakdown being? Because, of course, land acquisition is not construction jobs. So what of the $30 million would be land acquisition? What of the $30 million would be actual building?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cook, I'm going to let Ms. Orr respond to that because I think this is something that the agency would determine on depending upon what's available and what isn't that correct?
Yes. Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. As I said, we use the challenge fund to fund both land trusts and construction and rehabilitation of both single-family and multifamily properties. So we would have a competitive process as we do for everything and assess the applications based on, you know, a set of criteria. And I would expect that as they have in the last at least 10 years, land trusts have successfully competed for some of that money, but we don't have a breakdown. The difference with this is in order for these bonds to be non-tax exempt bonds, the property needs to be owned by a nonprofit. So we can't use that money to acquire both the land and the building in a land trust situation because the building then is owned by an individual.
Chairman.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. So going back to the nature of these bonds, so they're kind of a hybrid, is that fair to say, between classically GO bonds and the revenue bonds that the agency typically issues, and it presumes that we will continue to appropriate the 2 point whatever we need for debt service. Or the agency will have to redirect existing appropriations to the challenge grant to this purpose. Am I construing this correctly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, at this point, I don't believe that we would have the authority to use appropriations to pay debt service. And I think this would be highly unlikely that this would happen, but if, say, 4 years from now, you failed to make that appropriation of the $4.8 million for the biennium. I don't think we have the authority to take other appropriations that you've appropriated to a program to use for debt service. And so if we were in that situation, I would hope that somebody at the agency would sort of scramble around and work with you to make sure that we got the authority if that was the intent.
So, Mr.
Senator Dibble.
I think the authority does exist in the bill, at least in the delete all amendment. Line 3.11 talks about Commissioner of MMB must transfer to the challenge, you know, between 2010 and 2032 the amount necessary. So I think that's the case. So the real question I'm driving to is what do we appropriate to the challenge grant annually, typically, now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, the challenge fund base is about $17 million for the biennium, roughly. I didn't bring my folder, so I can't give you the exact number.
Okay. So,
Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, so this proposal would basically double our effort. We would receive double the effort this year, but in the form of a debt issue that we'd have to pay off over the next 20 years or so.
Yeah, Mr. Okay. Chair, Senator Dibble, that's correct. There would be a temporary short-term infusion into the challenge program. Over the course of 20 years, assuming we issued $30 million worth of bonds and interest rates don't drop below what we base the estimates on, you would pay $48 million in general fund appropriations for that $38 million worth of money that would go to housing.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Metzen?
Yeah, thank you. Help me understand just a little bit better, Assistant Commissioner. The mortgages and the cash flow, assuming they're paid in a timely fashion and you bundle them and they all pay and apparently that doesn't handle the $30 million, that we need to backfill it with the 2.4. And does it always have to be 2.4 if there are no foreclosures and the payments keep coming?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, I may be mistaken in how this is intended to be used, but I understood that the money was intended to be used as the challenge program monies are used now for gap financing. For the difference between what a number of the testifiers talked about in the earlier bill, about the difference between what a property can support on its income in debt service and what it costs to develop or rehab the building. So with affordable housing, which is why you've all appropriated money to us for the last 30 years, is the buildings can't support a debt service to pay all the costs of developing or rehabbing the property. And so the state appropriations are gap financing. And so this $30 million, as I understand it, is intended to fill that gap. The revenue bonds that we issue cover the costs that the building can support, either in terms of rents or that the homeowner can afford to pay. And the appropriations then get used to cover the difference between what can be supported by the building and what it actually costs.
Okay, that thank you. I think that helps me.
And that's what
you're talking about. Senator Kelash.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Orr, I'm a little confused on, is this change in the nature of the bonds going to improve the rating of the bonds and therefore the interest rates to be paid on those bonds, or is it, equally the same?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelash, these appropriation bonds are a totally different animal than our mortgage revenue bonds that we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And they will not, unless we default on the payment of the appropriations bonds, there will be no impact on our revenue bonds. The ratings, there will be absolutely no impact.
Follow up. Ms. Orr, I'm looking for, is there going to be a difference in the ratings between the appropriations bonds and the revenue bonds and interest payment difference as a result, or interest charged as a result to the agency?
Mr. Chair, Representative or Senator Kielash, they're both tax-exempt bonds, and I haven't actually at this point, I don't think that the interest rate that will be paid will be appreciably different from the revenue bonds that we issue on a regular basis.
Thanks.
Okay, then. Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 3273 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? Seeing none on that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, I have Senate File 3355.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the committee's basically seen this before, and this is a bill that's in reference to the securities fee that that we have in law, and the annual securities fee is about is 1/120th of 1%, and the bill changes it to 1/10th of 1% and raises about $25 million and appropriates money to the state grant program for our colleges. Let me give you a little bit of a background and understanding of what's going on here. This is after the National Securities Market Improvement Act of 1996, states that we are no longer able to register many different kinds of securities, including mutual funds and securities that are traded on public exchanges. The only kinds of security that the Department of Commerce still registers are small offerings from small issuers, such as James Page Brewery, and those are few and far between. But under federal law, states are still able to require notice filing for many different types of securities, including most mutual funds. Notice filing is much more limited than registration. Registration entails state regulators taking a hard look at an offering, examining all the numbers and other information going into a prospectus. But notice filing, on the other hand, involves the issuer of a security informing the Minnesota Department of Commerce that is planning to sell a certain number of shares at a certain security, for example, 20,000 shares of Vanguard Global Equity Mutual Fund. Minnesota and perhaps other states require notice filing and a related fee. This fee is assessed on the issuer of the security and not the broker. Under Minnesota law, this fee is applicable to the securities issued by an open-end management company, for example, mutual funds. In Minnesota, this fee has been 1/20th of 1% of the offering of the proposed offer. For example, on the 20,000 shares of Vanguard Global Equity Fund, if the offering price is $10 per share, Vanguard would pay a notice filing fee of $100, or 1/20th of 1% times the 20,000 times the $10. What this does, it is increases the rate from 1/20th of 1% to 1/10th of 1%, and in the example, instead of Vanguard paying $100, they would pay $200, and it would raise approximately $25 million. Now, according to the Department of Commerce, out of 36 states, he knows 30 states impose a notice filing fee of 1/10th of 1%. And most of the 33 of the 36, however, have caps of some sort on these notice filings. Now, Minnesota had a cap until 2008, which provided that all fees collected in excess of $26.4 million shall be returned to the issuers. The governor proposed eliminating the cap in his 2008 supplemental budget, and the legislature went around along with the recommendation. If Minnesota had decided to increase the cap to $50 million or $500 million, this would still be considered a cap, so we don't really know how big the caps are in other states. Now, all mutual funds sold in Minnesota are subject to the notice filing and the fee, except that those have a transitional exemption, and that is something about some sophisticated mutual funds. So what we're trying to do here is utilize this 1/10th of 1% like they do in every other state, and be able to use the money for our state grant program in this bill. And so, Mr. Chairman, that's basically what we're trying to do here, and I would stand for any questions, and I think there's some people who may want to testify.
I have Ms. Rowan. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, or MIFC. MIFC members provide Minnesotans with life and long-term care insurance and other financial security products, and some of our members sell mutual funds as well. MIFC members provide over 20,000 jobs in Minnesota, and that's in addition to the thousands of agents that distribute our product. While this is the first time you are hearing from me on this issue, I understand that it's not the first time you've heard this issue, and that has come up a number of times when we've been talking to folks about this recently. So I just wanted, from our perspective, to say that for those of you who know me and have worked with me, I do insurance issues. So the world of securities is new for our organization, and unfortunately, our internal process to get there took longer than yours did to pass it the first time. So we're very grateful for the second chance to come back and share our thoughts on this particular issue. I'm here today to express our concerns about the increase, the doubling of the fee on the mutual funds, not where the funds are going. In our view, it's not such a good funding source for a good cause. There seems to be some uncertainty about who actually pays this fee. And, you know, mutual funds, if you think of them, they're basically just like little mini businesses. So all the expenses that go to running a particular fund are then taken out of the return on the fund from the investor. So every dollar on a filing fee is a dollar less for the investor. And these investors, you know, they're not the hedge fund managers short selling euros on Wall Street. Mutual fund investors tend to be, and there's 1.1 million of them in Minnesota, but mutual fund investors tend to be, half of them make less than $80,000 a year, more than half of them haven't gone to college. And these are people saving for their retirement and their kids' education, 401ks, 529 plans. And they're the ones who will be paying for this fee. In addition, the other impact of the fee is that Minnesota basically has a very strong homegrown mutual fund industry. Companies like Ameriprise, Thrivent, Securian, U.S. Bank have invested millions in developing a strong sales force here in Minnesota. And the problem with the filing fee is that if you, the more Minnesotans that you sell to, the higher your expenses of the fund, the higher expenses for the fund. So because our fee now would be basically the highest in the country, the more Minnesotans you sell to, which our Minnesota-based companies tend to sell a lot of shares to Minnesotans, that's a drag on the return of the fund. And the problem with that is, if you know, when you shop for mutual funds, they're ranked by their returns. And so as the return goes down for your fund, you fall in the rankings. And that is a big deal in terms of the ability for our homegrown companies to compete with the national companies. So I thought I would have some other people with me, so I thought I would turn it over to Brian Peach from Ameriprise, if that's all right with the committee, to talk about what other states do.
Well, before that, Senator Keeler.
Yes. I'm sorry. Ms. Rowan?
Yes.
One of the questions I have is that you've stated that the expenses go up on the part of the owner of the fund. How big how much is invested in mutual funds in the state of Minnesota by Minnesotans, if you have, or any other number that we can base how big or how much this $23 million is as a percentage of the investment? No idea. Because one of the things you didn't say as a possible option to increasing the fees to the owner of the mutual fund is that the manager of the fund or the management company of the fund could absorb these fees to help keep them competitive. Now, you're saying that people with $80,000 can't afford this. The management company, they're making quite a bit more. So I'd just like if I could get a reason why this can't or wouldn't be, for marketing purposes, absorbed, or a portion of it absorbed by the mutual fund industry.
Senator Kielash, I think Mr. Jensen may have something that might help address your question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, on just doing the math, one-tenth of 1% was $50 million. So 1% would be $500 million. 10% would be $5 billion. So 100% of the activity would be $50 billion a year.
Pretty small number then, with 23.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Kulesh, I think that, and this comes from the Department of Commerce, that increasing the notice filing fee wouldn't affect the competitiveness of the mutual funds sold in Minnesota either, because every fund would be subject to the same amount. But you know, the 1/20th or 1/10th of 1% is what they charge in over 30 states. So you know, Minnesota is way cheaper than the other places are.
Ms. Rowan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's true that numerous states have a 1/10th percentage, but they have caps, which our state doesn't. So that means the fee is higher here than in those other states because there is no cap. And the issue for the competitiveness is that because we Minnesota companies sell to more Minnesotans, every Minnesotan you sell a share to, you pay the higher fee. The higher fees you pay, the less return on the fund. The less return on the fund, the less competitive your fund is. So it really does, in fact, make a difference for the competitiveness of our homegrown mutual industry.
Senator Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni or Ms. Rowan?
Rowan.
I think the cap is the issue. I understand there's many states that are at this amount, but the cap does make a difference. Are there any other states that have no cap like Minnesota? Any at all? Are any of those 30 states?
Mr. Chair, Senator Koch, yes, Texas, I believe, is the other state that doesn't have a cap. But they have another provision that limits the fee, which is something called a good until sold provision, which means that you only pay one fee for a share until it's sold. In Minnesota, we don't have that, so you would have to re-register unsold shares every year, which makes Minnesota would be higher than Texas.
Thank you.
Senator Vandeveer, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chair. You were talking about the people that hold these mutual fund securities. Is that include retirement plans, things like that? Or do some of those invest in these and they would be paying this fee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, yes, it does include 401k type retirement plans.
And Mr. Chair, I just want to ask, because I know it might come up on the floor, would there be any widows or orphans holding these?
Probably.
What did you say?
Mr. Rowan. Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, yes, I'm sure there's widows and orphans who hold these mutual funds.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Any veterans, too? I do have a question.
Senator Dibble.
So, Senator Tomasoni, you got an extra $2 million here. What are you going to do with that?
Senator Tomasoni.
And I'm happy the committee's reading the fiscal notes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I'm not sure what we're going to do with that just yet.
All right.
It could probably go to the same place as the other $23 million or to housing or to something else.
But, so I have a few ideas.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Brian Peach. I'm with Ameriprise Financial. Many of you probably are more familiar with our company under the names of American Express Financial, or IDS. We've been here since 1894, and we do a financial planning business with our customers. Our customers are primarily Main Street customers. We have a one-on-one relationship. Our financial advisors, their clients typically are people they went to college with, people they went to church with, people in their communities. We help people save for the everyday expenses in their life and plan for their long-term financial dreams. Our clients buy mutual funds for retirement. They buy them for their kids' education. They buy them for rainy days. They buy them so they can buy a lid cabin someday. And I'm just here to give a little bit more information on the state registration fees. Actually, we do know what other states charge because it's all statutory. It's very easy to do the research on. 35 states have a flat fee ranging from $1,000 to $2,500 on a registration. The states that have the 0.1% are Arkansas, Iowa, Louisiana, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Rhode Island, and Texas. And of them, other than Texas, the cap is $1,000 to $2,000 between the states. To give you an example of how this really plays out, for a company like ours, looking geographically at states that are fairly similar in this area, if we were going to register one of our funds, for example, a $100 million diversified bond fund, and we were going to register three classes of shares, which would be a typical class for us, in Minnesota that registration fee alone would be $100,000 for us. Doing the same registration in Wisconsin, $18,000. Doing the same registration in North Dakota, $375. This is putting Minnesota way outside of the realm of where other states are. It hurts companies like ours that have a larger sales force here and sell more shares to Minnesota consumers because it drags on our overall rate of return. So we care very much about this because it's passed on largely to individual shareholders of the mutual fund. This isn't something that there's a magical absorbing department somewhere that the company just absorbs the money. It gets passed on, and it reduces the value of people's retirement accounts, the values of their savings. And that's why we're here today, because we believe that this is really adversely hurting our shareholders and our Minnesota shareholders in particular.
Senator Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Peach, how many employees does Ameriprise Financial have in the state of Minnesota?
We have 6,000 employees in the state of Minnesota and $500 million in payroll in the state of Minnesota alone.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Thomasoni, in the
example you just gave, you're paying $50,000 currently.
Yes, under the new, your proposal would be $100,000. You would double that.
Right. Okay.
And Wisconsin would still say $18,000, and North Dakota would still be $375.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll be brief. Rick Clevin, I'm Vice President of Thrive Financial for Lutherans. We're a fraternal benefit society, and I'll make that short. It's a Lutheran membership group. We have 300,000 members in the state, and we exist to provide service to church and community and also for the financial security of our members. And in that regard, 40 years ago, our predecessor organization, Lutheran Brotherhood, and a lot of people know that better than Thrivent, created a mutual fund operation here and operates, you know, legally very similar to other mutual funds. But we're very much a mainstream concern. In fact, I did some research and found out that the average account held by Minnesotans here is about $10,000. And people use it to save for retirement, to save for their kids' college, that sort of thing. We're a frugal bunch of Lutherans. Some might say that's redundant. but we pay attention to costs and expenses. And we've got to be competitive, but we've got to be able to serve the people that are investing with us. And so in that regard, costs like this are something legally we must pass on. That's where it goes. There's not another place to do that, as Mr. Peach testified. So we're concerned very much as well. We do a large part of our business in the state. This will hurt our competitiveness, and it also will hurt our members and their ability to invest for their futures. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cope.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Clevin, the same question to you. How many employees does Thrive and have in the state of
about
Minnesota?
About 1,000.
About 1,000.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Oh, Senator Cope?
No, I don't have any questions.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little confused. Is the money that you're paying, the difference that you're paying, the $18,000 in Wisconsin versus currently $50,000 here, is that paid, the $18,000 paid by the residents of Wisconsin, or is it, who's paying that? I'm not sure I understand the difference there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those are the funds that's the cost that is remitted to the state to register the shares in that state. All shareholders bear the costs that are associated with the particular fund that they buy. $18,000 is what the state of Wisconsin would charge us to regulate those sales. $50,000 is what Minnesota currently charges us. It would be $100,000 under that, and $375,000 is what North Dakota would charge us to regulate those sales.
Follow-up. Now, why aren't all the mutual funds in North Dakota?
Because it's actually not where you're domiciled. It's where the shares are sold.
There's no people there.
There's nobody there to sell the shares to.
Actually, North Dakota has the highest per capita number of millionaires in the country, and it's actually a very lucrative sales place.
That's, you know, when there's only 650,000 people, it's easy to get a number like that really high. But, you know, like this comes from our Commerce Department, and it's It says that since every mutual fund offered would be subject to the notice filing requirements, potential investors wouldn't be able to shop around for mutual funds that do not have a notice filing fee. At best, they might limit themselves to individual securities sold on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, such as 100 shares of Microsoft, but these are completely different financial products and not really a substitute for mutual funds. Further, it's not clear whether the SEC imposes registration or filing fees that exceed those charged by Minnesota, and moreover, the notice filing fee is a very small amount of the total cost to the investor. Moving from 1/20th to 1/10th is unlikely to change anyone's behavior or even be noticed. So that comes right from the Commerce Department.
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, we're talking about $50 million, as I understand it, being passed on to small investors in the state of Minnesota. I'm just not sure how that could not be noticed. Leaving the competitive question aside, which I think there has been legitimate concerns raised, it's $50 million, and it's my neighbors. So, I'm having some trouble there. Frankly, my daughter is invested and has some ideas for Ameriprise funds.
Well,
we're saving for her college fund.
Senator Tomasoni.
You know, you can use the number $50 million, but if you look at the example I gave you, for Senator Koch, on 20,000 shares, and I don't know if you can afford 20,000 shares. I know I can't, but on 20,000 shares at $10 a share, the filing fee is $100. And so it's a very, very small amount. And so, the big numbers that we use are the total, and it's an indication of how many people are trading and how much is traded. And so any way you look at it, 0.1% is a small amount.
Senator Tomasoni, I think you bring up a good point. If you're talking about a $50 billion industry, it takes a lot of those small investors. So there's some big investors that are in this game, too. So. Anyway, thank you very much for your testimony. Would anyone like to speak on the use of the funds in the audience? If not, Senator Tomasoni will move that Senate File 3355 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cap, I don't think we have any more meetings, right?
Mr. Chair, members, no, we are should be done for the session.
Yeah, you said that last time.
Did we?
It's my birthday. You can't be mean to me.
Cap a happy birthday already.
Yeah. We did it for Cap's birthday.
Everyone, get your cake.
Committee's adjourned.